this, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
The world of political intrigue has been reduced to a little boy's game of playground insults as our president yells at Putin and proclaims, "You better get your guys to stop picking on the little kids or else." What is else? Well, it's so bad, so severe, I can't even tell you what it is, but it will be so punitive. It's time to stop, because we are concerned. I'm Lair Adams, and you'll find a lot of red lines we cross on the American Adversaries at Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer, and the big mercury-free studio. Our host has made a career of crossing the line. Don't cross him, Christopher Hart!
All right, thank you so very much, Lair Adams, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, once again for being with us on this fine Monday afternoon here in Central Florida. We are the American Adversaries. It is Drive Time, and we are coming to you live on AM 660, The Answer, from the mercury-free broadcasting studios. And don't forget, for the best in mercury-free dentistry, call my friend Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. We got a big show lined up for you today. Lair Adams is back in the driver's seat. Of course, I am Christopher Hart. We got Lucas, who's shooting us on the camera, so you can go to ustream.tv and type in American Adversaries, and boom, there you'll see what we're doing right here in the studio. But what you won't see is the man who's up on the bridge, and of course, that's Nick LoCicero, who's making us come all sound all good all across Central Florida. Nick LoCicero is doing a great job.
He's invisible.
For us. All right, so as I said, we got a big show lined up for you today. We got Abe Katzman going to join us here in just a few minutes. Dan Peterson of the Coalition for Property Rights is going to stop by and tell us his latest shenanigans. And Nostra Dennis is going to join us as well, as can you. 407-774-8255 is the number. And backed by popular demand, we're going to go right to today's episode of The Dumb and the Feckless. Nick, do we have the music? That's not the music.
That was a little different than
The gremlins are at work today. Today we're gonna go
that must
back.
Have been the Obama's favorite song. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, let's go to the commercial first. For Roxy Pacifics, today's episode of The Dumb and Feckless is being brought to you by Roxy Pacifics, the all natural kelp water, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, good for whatever ails you. And you can find out more about it and order some. And this week, shipping and handling free at RoxyPacifics.net. That's R-O-C-Z-E-Y Pacifics with an X.net. Nick, do we not have the music? There we go. All right. The Dumb and the Feckless. The true story based on Ed Klein's number one bestseller, Blood Feud, The Clintons versus the Obamas. Several foreign policy experts with whom I spoke wondered why Ambassador Stevens was in Benghazi on the fateful day of the attack on the American mission. If Stevens had felt the situation was dire, why in the hell did he go to Benghazi? Said Leslie Gelb, a former high-ranking State Department official and President Emeritus at the Council on Foreign Relations. There was no State Department operation there. Was he going to talk to some bad actor Islamic leaders there? He knew them because they were part of the fight against Gaddafi. We were not talking about a fool here. Stevens was an experienced and capable guy who knew these jihadi, word I can't say, in Benghazi personally. Ambassador Stevens spoke fluent Arabic and had cultivated close ties with leaders of the Libyan militia groups, including al-Qaeda affiliates. According to my source, Stevens traveled to Benghazi to monitor the CIA's arm transfer operation there and to make sure that the weapons did not fall into the hands of terrorists. It was a perilous assignment, like traveling unarmed into the Wild West. And had an experienced hand like Stevens would not have taken such a risk unless higher-ups in Washington thought it was absolutely necessary. And it had become absolutely necessary because, like so many CIA operations, this one had gone awry. Libyan weapons, originally earmarked for pro-Western opposition groups in Syria, were ending up in the hands of anti-Western bad actors. Both the White House and the State Department had grown increasingly alarmed that al-Qaeda had spread its tentacles throughout northern Africa and turned a section of the African state of Mali into an Afghan-like sanctuary. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu had complained to President Obama that the weapons being transferred by the CIA were ending up in the control of Iranian-backed Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon and Hamas terrorists in the Gaza Strip. In the last year, wrote Dor Gold, an Israeli diplomat who had served under several Israeli governments, al-Qaeda has begun to spread its influence across the Sahara. Al-Qaeda's weaponry came from post-Gaddafi Libya, whose arsenal was boosting the arms trade from Morocco to Sinai. Israeli sources have noted that Libyan weapons, including shoulder-fired SA anti-aircraft missiles, were also reaching the Gaza Strip, where one was fired at an Israeli helicopter for the first time. Tomorrow, we continue the story of Benghazi in Blood Feud, the number one bestseller by Ed Klein. I highly suggest you get this book. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries. It is drive time, and we are coming to you live on AM 660. The Answer, 407-774-8255 is the number, of course. All right, let's go now to our man in Jerusalem, who is, of course, Abe Katzman, and you can find his work at Abe Katzman. That's Katzman with an S.com. Abe, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing just fine.
Can you give us an update on what happened today in Gaza?
Well, there's been extensive fighting. There have been Israel has suffered a number of casualties. The death toll actually for Israeli troops is up to 25, which might not sound like a lot, but when you think about how small Israel is, proportionally, that would be the equivalent of about 1,000 Americans.
Yeah. Yes, that's a significant loss.
And a couple of hours ago, they were telling us here it was 18, just a couple of hours ago. So they've lost more since then.
Yeah,
seven more were killed today. Apparently, I mean, ordinarily, having significant losses like that might even present a certain amount of domestic opposition, internal opposition to the war. But here, that hasn't happened, and I think one of the reasons is the Israeli public is very conscious of the circumstances under which these soldiers have been killed. At least four of them today were hit by terrorists who had infiltrated into Israel through one of these tunnels with a plan to attack kibbutz. There were apparently 10 terrorists. They come in wearing Israeli army uniforms. And they come in with also with tranquilizers and handcuffs, hoping to kidnap either soldiers or civilians and haul them back to Gaza through the tunnels.
Have they accomplished that? We've heard reports, sketchy reports, that there was perhaps one Israeli POW. Can you confirm or deny that?
I can confirm that there were those reports.
Okay.
It's unclear. It may be It may be that what they have is they may have taken a may have captured a dead body.
Right.
That's what I think is possible based on assuming that that there's some truth in what they're saying and some truth in the Israeli denial. Neither one has been all that clear. So I hope that it's completely false. Israel has denied it. But the way they denied it leaves room for the possibility that that Hamas may have gotten a body.
So perhaps Israel knows that the military leaders know that this individual was killed in action, but can't account for his body.
That is possible. They have not. They've been releasing names of those killed, but they have not released all the names yet. So there may be reasons why not.
You anticipated one of my questions, and that was, is the political situation there coming apart, or is it coalescing? And what you're saying is telling me that the Israeli public is coalescing around Benjamin Netanyahu and the actions that he's taking.
Yeah, it's there's actually very strong support for this action. If anything, what's happened, there's been a certain amount of criticism of Netanyahu for originally agreeing to those couple of ceasefires that were proposed.
Right.
That Hamas ended up violating. So there are a number of people asking Netanyahu, what are you doing? Why are you agreeing to the ceasefire before any of the objectives have been achieved? I believe that the agreement to the ceasefire was done with the knowledge that Hamas would not agree to the ceasefire or at some point would violate it.
Sure.
And there are political calculations involved in terms of world support, in terms of who ends up with the political moral high ground for who can claim to have violated a ceasefire,
right,
who can claim to have agreed to one.
Right. Certainly, it would appear as though the Israeli military understands or knows their enemy, so to speak, and knows, you know, their track record and the way they think. And obviously, even if Hamas, as you said, had agreed to the terms of either one or both of these ceasefires, they would have violated it in due course in very short order. I'm sure of that as well. Abe, I'm intrigued by these tunnels. Now, I saw a little bit of I don't know if it was ABC, but one reporter was over there, and he was in one of these tunnels. And they looked pretty sophisticated. It looked like they were fortified with concrete, and it wasn't, you know, some Hogan's Heroes type thing. Am I seeing this wrong? Are these real sophisticated tunnels?
No, these are sophisticated tunnels. These are made with they're made with concrete. They are large enough to and strong enough to they'll go on for they'll reach I believe about a mile into Israeli into Israeli territory. They're strong and they're large enough to transport people and goods through.
Well,
they are designed to be able to pop up to have terrorists pop up behind Israeli lines and commit terror acts. That's really their only purpose.
Well, now, obviously, this requires some level of sophisticated understanding of engineering to even be able to conceive of doing this, much less pull it off. And when they get to the Israeli end of the tunnel, how do they disguise it, or do they just leave it sealed until they're ready to come out and do their dirty work?
I believe it's left sealed until the very end. That way, it's very difficult for Israel to detect it.
Right.
Israel seems to have been taken by a little bit of surprise in terms of the numbers of these tunnels. There's some question in terms of the intelligence of exactly what it was they knew before.
Yeah.
And in fact, there is a theory that one of the reasons that Hamas started attacking Israel with rockets now is that Israel made some discoveries about these tunnels and was, I guess the jig was up. And they figured that now is their chance to attack. They're not going to be able to use these tunnels if they don't go on the attack soon.
And now, real quickly, obviously it takes a long time to dig and build these tunnels, I would assume.
These are works that have taken months, if not years, to prepare.
Well, and hey, we do have the technology, at least here in America, to detect certain tunnels like that with a sophisticated radar. I'm kind of surprised we haven't offered our help to do such a thing.
I don't know exactly what we have in America. Apparently, there are tunnels, or there has been at least some effort to tunnel under the Mexican border.
They do, yes.
Yes, and they found ways to pick that up, but I thought that technology existed, and especially sophisticated tunnels like that.
I don't know what to tell you. I'm not sure why they have taken as long to discover as they have. But I imagine that there's a cat-and-mouse game in terms of doing things in such a way that can't be discovered by the existing technologies.
Right.
And there's a constant testing between the two sides of either detecting the tunnel or trying to make the tunnel undetectable.
And now, where do the tunnels normally start? Do they start in the mosques? Do they start in schools? Do they start in just average everyday houses?
They, for the most part, start in everyday houses, but I think that they're searching in other areas, in schools and mosques. I mean, they all come from populated areas, from areas where they can be disguised as just as regular structures. But so far, most of them have been discovered underneath homes. The tunnel network, by the way, is so extensive that they refer to it, apparently have been referring to it as Lower Gaza.
Wow.
Wow, underground Gaza, huh?
Yeah.
Two more questions. Are they interconnected, and what is Israel doing to seal them up, or are they blowing them up, or what are they doing about them?
I know they're blowing up some of them. If they are interconnected, they seem to be interconnected within Gaza. I don't believe that there is interconnection once they cross under the Israeli border.
I see.
Personally, if I discover them, I wouldn't blow them up until I'm sure there's a lot of the bad guys in them, and that's when I'd say, okay.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Actually, one more question about the tunnels. Are these the similar tunnels that existed between Egypt and the Palestinian territories?
They're similar. They're not exactly the same. The ones that exist with Egypt are made with the intention much more of smuggling goods. These are made for the ability of terrorists to get through quickly and to get back quickly.
So
the ones to Egypt have, for instance, many of them have railroad tracks in them.
Wow. So, yeah. But you couldn't argue that there's any humanitarian need for the tunnels between, obviously, Gaza and Israel.
And, absolutely not.
And al-Sisi, the new leader of Egypt, has pretty well shut off the tunnels on the Egyptian side, too, I understand, hasn't he?
He's tried. I don't know how successful he's been. Even if he's gotten 90% of them, that still leaves a significant number. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of these tunnels that existed.
Right. It's very similar to what the North Vietnamese did in the Vietnam War. All right. Okay, Abe, if you'll stay with us through the break, we have a number of more questions for you, and Nostradamus is going to join us as well. Okay, thank you. All right, that's Abe Katzman. He's calling us live from Jerusalem. Please don't go away.
AM 660, The End.
Here is tonight's American Adversaries Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Today's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Hart for SoundbiteRx.com. Once again, folks, let me just give you a quick rundown of some of the brand new stories posted today at SoundbiteRx.com. There's another in-depth article about Lois Lerner and how she was trying to stay a step ahead of the investigators at the IRS. And this, have you heard about Elizabeth Warren and her 11 commandments? Laughable if you ask me, but you can find them all 11 at SoundbiteRx.com. Islamic laws against Christians. Yeah. Have you ever heard of, I believe it's pronounced jizya? That is tax that you must pay if you are a non-believer and you wish to survive in a Muslim society. Don't believe me? It's going on right now in northern Iraq. ISIS has issued a proclamation. You had until this past Saturday, if you were a Christian, to get out of northern Iraq, pay the tax, become a Muslim, or die. What a great religion, huh? But meanwhile, Michelle and Barack are worried about what they eat. Michelle was a little concerned and felt the need to interrupt Barack when he was announcing that her favorite fruit is French fries. Look out, Hamburglar, here she comes. And then there's two great articles about what's going on in Israel between the Palestinians and the Israelis. One from the Jerusalem Post, which talks about media bias, which we talked about with Abe Katzman on our show last week. A lot of great news stories today. Inform yourself at soundbiterx.com. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time, and you are listening to us on AM 660, The Answer, coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. 407-774-8255 is the number. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams. We're now joined in the studio by Dan Peterson, and we'll be talking a little bit later on today about what he's going to be up to tomorrow, starting tomorrow. You can watch us live on Ustream.tv. Just go there and type in American Adversaries and see our man Lucas Paris's good work. And in the meantime, we have Abe Katzman on the line, who Nostradamus has just informed me, Abe, that you are actually in New York City tonight.
That is correct.
He let the secret out of the bag. All right. Well, once again, thanks for being on the show and taking time out of your evening to do it. Abe, I want to ask you, I don't know if it's sort of a philosophical question, but I'd like your honest opinion on it because I've got an opinion on it. Who do you think is the bigger enemy to the Palestinian people, Israel or Hamas?
I don't think that it's even a close call. Hamas is by far the bigger impediment to normal Palestinians leading normal lives. They run a police state. They run an Islamist state. Hamas is willing to fight very much to the, as long as the blood of normal Palestinians is being spilled. They look at it as from a public relations standpoint, and they see it as a victory for themselves when Palestinians are killed. So it is, I don't know, under the police state conditions, whether you'd get that many people in Gaza admitting that this is the issue. But Hamas is really a problem and is really one of the reasons that their lives are as unpleasant as they seem to be.
And I think you're absolutely right, and obviously that's my opinion on it as well. The reason I bring that up is because I don't hear that being said enough. I don't hear that being said enough by anyone, because what I see going on in Gaza is not an incursion, if you will, by the Israelis into Palestinian territory, or what I see it as is being actually a rescue operation for the Palestinians, as much as it is a security operation for the security of Israel itself. And I think that it needs to be depicted as such, Abe.
Yeah, well, remember, Israel pulled out of Gaza 9 years ago. There hasn't been an Israeli there, at least of his own volition. I mean, there was one kidnapped. But this is really an exercise in Palestinian self-rule. And they voted in Hamas, or Hamas took over.
Right.
And the conditions of their rather than building up the country, rather than building up roads and railways and infrastructure, they built terror tunnels. This is what they've devoted all their assets to.
Right.
And it's really it's not something that the average Hamas Palestinian, the average Palestinian in Gaza benefits from. So they're still mired in poverty. Israel would be thrilled if a real civil society would develop there. And Israel would be happy to trade with them. Israel would work very nicely with them. But that's not the direction that they've chosen to go.
Well, and that's why I think that this is an opportunity, and I think maybe Netanyahu kind of sees it, maybe not exactly as I'm talking about, but for instance, he's quoted in the Wall Street Journal today as saying, "We will complete what they began and return quiet to Israel." And I think the quiet to Israel means Hamas gone, and so I hope that this operation does as much damage to Hamas and with the goal in mind of giving normal Palestinians, quote-unquote normal, a fresh opportunity at rebuilding their lives in Gaza. Because you're absolutely right. And, you know, it was uncanny because I was watching Netanyahu yesterday on I believe it was Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer. And he was kind of parroting what we talked about last week on this show, Abe, and kind of what you just said, and that is that, you know, the Palestinians had an opportunity with Gaza to turn it into anything that they wanted it to be. And lo and behold, what they turned it into was a fortress from which to kill Jews and attack Israel. And until that fortress is completely destroyed, Israel will not have quiet, as Prime Minister Netanyahu said.
Yeah, that is true. And that actually makes me worry a little bit about what Barack Obama and John Kerry are up to in terms of calling for an immediate ceasefire. I think that the job that Israel has set out to do in terms of destroying the fortress, getting rid of Hamas, or at least restoring quiet, the military objectives have not yet been achieved. And if President Obama and Secretary Kerry get in and force Israel to accept some kind of ceasefire before they're ready to, all they're doing is kicking the can down the road, and they're going to end up having the same kind of problems later if they haven't eliminated the tunnels and if they haven't eliminated the capability for firing rockets.
And they will only cause more suffering in the long run to Palestinians as well as Israelis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Abe Nostradamus here in studio.
And yeah, he snuck in the door on us when we weren't looking there.
That's some stuff to drop off. I figured.
So what's going on here? Abe's in New York instead of Jerusalem, and you're here instead of at headquarters.
Well, yeah. I was going to ask you, though, Abe, if you think the timing is suspect for calling for this ceasefire, because so far 20 Israelis have died in this conflict, 510 Palestinians. Would that be tantamount to calling a timeout in the middle of being overwhelmed?
That's a good question. Part of the question has to do with just who these 500 Palestinians are. Even though on the Palestinian side they like to claim they're heavily civilians, Al Jazeera had a list of fatalities, and somebody did a cross-check on them and discovered that most of them it's very heavily male, and very heavily men over 40, which would indicate senior members of the terror organizations that Israel has successfully targeted.
And we've seen evidence that Israel is exercising restraint whenever possible.
Due caution, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, what if they weren't, if they were actually out to kill Palestinians, the numbers would skyrocket. They've been doing everything they can to avoid civilian deaths.
Absolutely, they have. And it has been a very carefully planned and carefully executed operation by the Israeli military. We have a caller who has a question for you, Abe, if you can entertain it for us, please. Al, thank you for calling. Where you been, man?
I've been in California.
Oh, okay. Well, you're going to have to tell Carl all about that. You know, he's from L.A.
Home of the live.
That's right, man. All right, your question, please, for Abe, and thank you for calling.
My question is, Abe, who created Hamas?
Good question, Abe.
Who created Hamas?
That was his question.
I'm not sure what the answer is, or at least what I gather the caller is getting at.
Hamas was created by the USA.
All right. And what is you saying is created by the CIA?
USA.
Oh.
Yes.
And what is your evidence of that?
History, sir. There's history. Hamas was put in during Iran and Iraq war.
Okay. And I guess you could also say that the United States also created Al-Qaeda, right? Because we helped bin Laden and the Taliban when they tried to oust, when they did oust the Soviet Union from Afghanistan. But things change. Things change. And things are different. And it doesn't really matter who created Hamas. What matters is what is Hamas doing? Abe, am I not right?
No, that's right. I don't believe that Hamas was exactly created by the U.S., at least not directly, but even so, right. What matters is what they are today. We're not fighting about history from, I mean, you're talking Iran-Iraq war, that's 25 years ago.
That's right. I mean, we at one time we supported Saddam Hussein, did we not? I mean, it had to do with what was happening at the time. And obviously Hamas, and I'll just say, just for argument's sake, if it was created by the United States, and I'm not certain that it was, but let's just assume for argument's sake that it was obviously not created to attack Israel and kill Jews. It was, if anything, created to prevent that sort of thing from happening. So good question, good try, but nonetheless, what is really pertinent is what has Hamas become and what are they doing? And Israel, I think, is answering what they've been doing quite appropriately. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about John Kerry and Barack Obama, because, yeah, Obama seems to be very anxious, you know, for this to end. He doesn't, you know, want to condemn what they are, what the Hamas has been doing in you know, very specific and clear terms. He's just wishy-washy as
he
usual.
He wants to deflect.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the last thing that we need right now. I mean, what Hamas needs to be told is, if you want to be martyred, well, we'll be happy to do it for you, my friends. Abe?
Yeah. No, that's right. But I think the one thing that you have to be very careful of is pushing a ceasefire before the ceasefire is ready to be put in place.
Absolutely.
After Israel accomplishes some of its military objectives here, then go ahead and make a ceasefire. Don't do it before. The same way that, for instance, if we go into, let's say the U.S. goes into Afghanistan, you wouldn't have the rest of the world calling for a ceasefire before the U.S., or at least the U.S. wouldn't pay any attention to anyone calling for a ceasefire until the military objectives were achieved.
Well,
so the same thing should happen here.
I would have agreed with you until we got this president. I'm not so sure about that. Really quickly, though, Nostradamus has another one.
Yeah, I want to finish up by I know you're in New York, and I'm a former New Yorker, so I want to make you aware. There is a series of interconnected tunnels, some of them dimly lit, some of them with no electricity at all, that are under your feet right now. Please stay out of them. The people in there, for the most part, they're the scum of the earth.
All right. Now. Hey,
wasn't that the Morlocks in the time machine?
Yes, that's where they are.
Hey, Abe, I have one last question for you. There are Palestinian citizens of Israel, are they not?
Sure. There are over 1 million Arabs who are citizens of Israel.
Are they treated in any way as second-class citizens?
I wouldn't say that they are that they live fully equal lives, but they are fully equal under the law. There are a couple of minor differences. They don't have to serve in the military. But for the most part, no, they vote. There's an Arab Supreme Court justice. They participate in the economy fully. They're in all of the finest universities in Israel. No, they're treated very well.
Are there any Israeli citizens, recognized citizens, in any of the Palestinian-held territories?
Not that I am aware of.
So now we know who can live with the other in their midst, do we not?
Yes, and I think we're, I don't know if it's exactly the same thing, but you see what's going on with the Christians in Iraq and Mosul.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Abe, as usual, it's been extremely informative, and we are so very much appreciative to have you as part of our show.
Always a pleasure. I really appreciate being with you guys.
All right, and we do as well. And enjoy your time here in the United States, please.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Abe.
You got gotta keep them separated.
Gotta keep all of us separated, because we are the American Adversaries in Drive Time. Nostradamus stopping by to say hi on the weekday.
This is where we separate fact from fiction, truth from the liars. All right, and we got Dan Peterson in the studio with us this afternoon from the Coalition for Property Rights. Dan, I saw you kind of nodding your head there when we were talking to Abe. Fascinating stuff talking to that man, isn't it?
He's a brave man, and he's living in a dangerous place where war can break out. You know, a couple times in Moscow when I was there, there were revolutions that broke out. It's a real interesting thing when you're the citizen of one country and you are stuck in another country that's undergoing an attempted coup.
And just think of this. He's going to New York for safety.
And that's
that
right.
Makes no sense to me.
Just don't go to Chicago.
By the way, that was said by a man from New York.
Yeah, I can do that, okay? I can make fun of my own.
All right, Dan Peterson, what are you going to be up to this week?
Well, this was interesting. As you and the listeners know, I spent a lot of time in Tallahassee trying to prevent a really bad piece of legislation on
this past session.
Past legislative
session. And you had an effect. Indeed, you did.
Bill got stopped, and that was to everyone's good fortune.
Thank you.
While I was there,
tell us real quickly what that bill was.
Oh, that was the bill that said we're going to protect the springs, but one of the things that was going to be mandated, all the septic systems were going to be put on sewer systems.
Right.
And there was another layer of government that was going to be created called the Responsible Management Entities. It was going to manage, help everyone take care of their septic systems and
help you take care of your septic system by taking away your property, basically, is what it amounted to.
It was frightening
and
stuff.
Your money.
Yeah. Well, so what is happening now? Is something else happening that you're going to try to prevent, or what's going on?
Well, one of the good guys that I worked with up there was one of the lobbyists who represented the Florida Chamber of Commerce. And I heard about it. He told me about a conference. He said, you know, you're dealing with all these property rights issues are often because of environmental regulation, over-regulation in some cases.
Yeah.
And he said, there's a conference this summer you really ought to go to, and it's all about the environment. So I was sent a link to this conference, and next week, in this really hard place to have to go to called Marco Island.
Oh, boy.
Going
to be roughing it up there, buddy.
The Florida Chamber sponsors a conference that's called the Environmental Permitting Summer School. And it's a three-day conference, and over 3 days, I added up, there are 100 different seminars being offered. Now, you can only go to 10 of them, so I'm having to pick and choose. But almost every seminar at this conference is an issue that I have dealt with or I know I will be dealing with. And, of course, we all know that water quantity and quality in Florida is a huge issue right now and will be in the next legislative session.
Yep.
And there are numerous seminars to attend in that. Well, in the process of getting involved in trying to go to the conference, I found out that on Tuesday, which is tomorrow, there's what they call early bird sessions. And there are four sessions. They are 3 to 4 hours in length. And one of them was on solutions for springs.
Okay.
And my friend invited me to be on a panel and to speak for 20 minutes from the perspective of Coalition for Property Rights. How do we go about protecting Florida Springs? What are we going to do about it?
Are there going to be state legislators there as well?
Well, the conference, it's interesting. The conference, it says this is for state legislators, local government officials, engineers, planners, environmental specialty people, realtors, citizen groups. I mean, it's almost anybody, and anybody could find seminars of interest at this conference. So there's a whole matrix here. Every hour of each of the 3 days, there is probably 10 different seminars that you can test. Of course, one of them that I noticed right away was the one that was entitled Property Rights, A Renewal of Conflicts.
Yeah, that's all we need is renewed conflicts with property rights. Property rights are property rights. It's kind of the incubator stage of legislation, isn't it, this sort of thing?
Oh, as soon as the last session ended, of course, people started working towards the next legislative
session.
And
that's what
retool
is all a part of.
Now, Dan, when you're up in Tallahassee trying to beat back this bad legislation, do you ever feel like the kid with his finger stuck in the dike seeing 5, 6, 10 other little holes cropping up? It seems like we're being attacked on all sides with whatever ammunition is possible.
It's incredible. And I wouldn't say it's not just at legislative session. It's every morning when I wake up, because there are people who are, you know, every time a new regulation is introduced, it takes away part of our liberty. Mm-hmm. And some regulations, to be honest, are good, and we need them for public safety and for public health. But every slice of regulatory mandate takes away some more of our freedom and liberty.
Right.
And so that's why we have to be vigilant on it. And there's so much bad stuff out there. It gets to be overwhelming. And there are a lot of people that that help monitor this stuff, and they help keep me informed. I just found out, despite the fact that there is no evidence that these septic systems are contributing to pollution right here in the Wekiva area.
Yep.
Next week, there's going to be a community meeting because the St. John's Water Management District is trying to obtain a grant, and they want to change. They want to take two neighborhoods, I think, in the Sweetwater area, and change all their septic tanks and systems and put them into sewers.
Do you know where that meeting's going to be?
I do.
In case some of our listeners may want to go to this.
That is a community meeting. It's at the Orange County Library North, and that is at 6 p.m. on July the 30th.
Is that the one on Hunt Club Boulevard over there?
I don't have a street address for that.
Orange County Library, that'd be different.
But it's the North one.
Orange County Library North, and that's the 30th. Meeting on Wekiva Springs Tank Retrofit Project.
Tidy little title.
These people aren't going to wait for the law.
We'll find out exactly what library that is, and we'll let you folks know in case you want to go, especially you folks who live in the Wekiva area up here. I know
and
a lot
have
of
a septic tank.
I know a
beautiful
lot of
neighborhoods
you are
up there. You know they're going to rip that whole thing up.
Everett Husky is the one who built Wekiva. I mean, he's the one who started Wekiva, really. Do you remember?
I do not know that.
Okay, Everett Husky was a realtor. He was a card. He loved to play a harmonica, by the way. But he was a real estate developer, and he was been in real estate in Central Florida. He's died now, but he was in real estate in Central Florida for a long time. And he built those homes in Sweetwater, and he purposely put in septic tank systems because they are one of the best, if they are the best system to have.
Recognized by EPA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of all people.
Absolutely. And it was a purposeful decision because he was trying to do the best thing for the homeowner and the environment.
The Wekiva River goes right through there.
And so it was done that way and to begin with because that was the way it was thought that was the best way to do it. And now, with no science at all, you got a bunch of yahoos coming along saying, oh, no, that's bad. It's doing this, that, and the other thing. Sorry, Dennis. But nonetheless, once again, you're going to maybe keep us updated as to what's going on there and maybe who's there.
I will be attending as many seminars as I can, but I also hope to actually, I've prepared a little survey. It's an 11-question survey that I'm hoping to speak with some of the leaders. For instance, our Secretary of Agriculture, Adam Putnam, will be there speaking.
Yeah.
And Herschel Vineyard, who was at our CPR luncheon recently, will be there. So hoping to get in front of some of those people, ask some questions, and get some honest answers.
Well, you're a courageous man. You said Abe Katzman's a courageous man. You're right about that. Nostradamus is now going to tell us about another courageous man. Are you not, Nostradamus?
How about a whole bunch of courageous men?
Okay.
Concerned Veterans for America, featuring speakers like Dakota Meyer, Sean Parnell, Karen Vaughn, and Dave Bray and Madison Rising. It's a free concert. It's going on this Friday, the 25th. It starts at 6:30. It's down at Orlando Harley. That's right down off of where we were last Friday, John Young Parkway.
I-4.
Right off of I-4.
It's the big Harley place you see right there on I-4.
I hear there'll be a little Sonny's Barbecue.
Ooh.
I don't know if there'll be enough for all of us, but
it's free? When does it start?
It's a free concert. It starts at 6:30. It's supposed to go till about 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Special guest for these two concerts in Tampa and Orlando, Ayla Brown. She's a country singer. Her dad is Scott Brown, former senator from Massachusetts.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And that's free. It's Friday.
Free.
At the Orlando Harley. Orlando Harley at 6:30. Madison Rising. Great group. Have you heard of
that? And I have not, but I was going to say, and if you're looking for something on Saturday, I'll be at the Broadway Pizza over there in the...
Ooh. Where's Broadway Pizza?
That's over on 434 over there in the... I can't remember.
Like the Staples Shopping Center.
Yeah, well, it's where the Stein Mart is.
Steinmark Shopping Mall, 434.
Fresh Foods is over there, so.
All right.
7 to 10.
Night, everybody.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660.